As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Two of the radio program for this December the 1st. Bob McCown, Michael Grange in our Toronto studios. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe will join us in a few minutes. We'll compare the Blue Jays offseason and the Red Sox offseason so far. Who would you rather be?
Are you asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Blue Jays, just because they had less ground to make up.
All right, let me rephrase the question. Which of the two organizations do you think has made more improvement with the two players that they've acquired?
I think the Blue Jays. I mean, I would have to, I think Donaldson is pretty widely acclaimed as being one of the top four or five players in the American League.
He's like a stud.
He's a better third baseman than Sandoval. And Russell Martin as a catcher, the impact you'd expect he could have throughout your lineup, not just obviously offensively, he should be a bigger, more impactful contributor than Ramirez. So, Blue Jays.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think the issue you got to be a little bit concerned about from the Red Sox or from the Blue Jays' point of view regarding the Red Sox is they still have a truckload of cash. I'm sure they're willing to spend.
Oh, there's lots more.
We're
on December. We're December 1st here.
I mean,
we got lots more to come.
You know, you'd think they would have a reasonable shot at John Lester if they really wanted to go at John Lester.
Sure,
but they had John Lester last year, so
yeah, how'd that work out?
You know, it didn't work out that well. So it wasn't John Lester's fault. So I think the Blue Jays they're in a pretty good spot, and I guess what's really interesting is they have some chips that. And we can talk to Alex Anthopoulos about this, but they have some chips that are readily available to use that are typically pretty valuable, right, in the form of two starting pitchers, J.A. Happ and R.A. Dickey, that are, you know, pretty reliable, pretty effective back end of rotation type arms.
If you traded Dickey,
you would think you could get a decent position player for that.
You would think so.
Although, I think so.
Yeah, you only get 1 year. So you're probably looking at a team that like you're.
I feel like you get 2 years.
I think you only get.
I thought he signed. I thought it was a 3 year extension. If not, like I think he's under club control for at least two more years.
Let's check on that. Can we please? We're checking.
Yeah.
I still think you're looking at a contending team.
With or without, sorry. If they do nothing more.
No, I think you're looking at a content. You're dealing him
you're so
to a contending
right
team.
You're so happy to be talking baseball.
I am. I love baseball.
Day.
I love.
I'm you're happy.
Well, I like
I
talking
tell.
Baseball anytime.
I know, but it's like a bonus on a day like this.
Yeah. I just do baseball all the time if I could, I think. Having said that, I think you're looking at a team who is a contender if you're going to deal Dickey. I don't think you're going to deal him to a team that the Texas Rangers, for example, that doesn't seem to work for Texas. Dickey's the kind of guy if you think you can you're a contender and you need arms or an arm out of the bullpen. That's the team you're looking at.
That makes sense.
The kind of team you're looking at.
That makes sense in the sense of because you're looking for a trade partner that has. You know, it's not going to be a prospects. It's going to be, you know, I presume if you're trading R.A. Dickey, you're looking for a major league answer to an existing problem, likely an outfield or a second baseman.
Here's the question, though. I mean, do you trade Dickey for a prospect or a suspect? T- take that $12-plus million off of the payroll and then reinvest that in somebody player. Like, well, like a John Lester. There are 2 years left for Dickey, so my apologies. Okay.
No, because it was a three-year extension at 39, right? So, anyway. I see what you mean. I think on the Lester point of view, you're probably going to run into that five-year problem that the Jays have regarding their pitchers.
Yeah,
right?
And I'm told that they aren't necessarily, they're considering the possibility of going longer. Now, there was a story that Chicago Cubs had offered Lester $135-plus million over 6 years. That's a lot of money.
It feels like a lot of money.
Well, it's $22.5 million
a
year.
I mean, it's a lot of money in the Blue Jays context because, you know, they haven't spent that kind of money. I mean, they've inherited it from Reyes and Burley, and really it's kind of felt like a bit of an anvil. Not because the players themselves aren't good players, but because, you know, it's taken up such a proportion of what clearly are some pretty strict payroll parameters that they've had.
And you're 100% right. But if you replace Dickey with Lester, are you a better team?
Yeah.
Okay. If it costs you an extra $10 million.
Is it worth it?
Is it worth it?
Yeah, well, you get into that whole, you know, penny wise, pound foolish.
Well, because I'm not looking, I don't think you go after a Lester unless you deal a Dickey.
See, I guess my thinking in dealing Dickey or Jay Happ, who I think in some ways might be even more attractive, he doesn't solve your payroll.
He's 7.5.
Yeah. But he, but I think he might be in some ways more attractive to other teams. I mean, he had a very good second half last year, and he's still kind of, anyway, regardless.
And I like left-handers. Having a left-hander.
Everyone seems to need one. So you're sort of, taking the long way around, right?
I'm trying to look at, I'm trying to look at layers. And I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's how you build a team is it's a question of layers. And
I think the number that we're like 140 million seems to be about the number that they want to.
Yeah, I was told that the payroll will go up, but they don't know how much.
They finished at about 127 last year or something.
I thought it was in the low 130s, but whatever is.
But to your point, if you shave off 12 or 13 million bucks for Dickey,
Then it costs you $23 million for Lester,
and then the other $10 million variable is Cabrera. Right now, Seattle signs Cruz today, and what was that? 4 years at $57 million or something.
Yep.
For a 34-year-old who has a sort of a shared PD history, hit 40 home runs. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's probably a more valuable overall bat, right? I mean, what does that say about Cabrera's market? And my sense is, as much as they like Cabrera, they'd love to have Cabrera, they are not going to do something financially silly to keep Cabrera.
Oh, no. I think they've already answered the bat situation, both behind the plate and at third base now.
Right. But, I mean, Shai Davidi, who's usually, well, not usually, he's often very plugged in on these kinds of things. The name he keeps coming back to is Aoki. Kind of like a...
And Aoki's a nice player.
His secondary stats, like, he doesn't have that. I think the thing with Cabrera is that 300 batting average just catches your eye, right?
But, well, sure.
You know, Aoki's got the, you know, as good or better on base. He's got some other attributes, good defender, you know, disciplined batting approach. You put him at the bottom of a lineup, and then you turn it over and hand it to the Donaldsons of the world and the Bautistas of the world. You're doing a lot of damage. But again, so instead of penciling, because I think ever since the Russell Martin deal was done with that $7 million first year, the message has been, we do have money for Cabrera, but we don't have an infinite amount of money for him. And so to your way of thinking, if all of a sudden it's not Cabrera, but it's Aoki at $9 million, where Cabrera was going to be 13 or 14 or $15
million. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden John Lester's getting closer.
It's not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, these are the kinds of things you have to look at. And I think also, I think you also have to think about that, you know, you're playing a man short with Josh Tolley.
Yeah, no, I think that's underrated. I mean, especially now with the bullpens. They were running 12 and 13 man bullpens at certain points of last year. You can't have a guy on your bench you can't use.
Yeah.
You know, like you really only have three or four bench players. They've got to be effective. They got to be able to play more than one position.
Yep.
So, no, I think that I mean, really, the Blue Jays were playing.
I mean, are you going to pinch hit Josh Tolley very often?
No. I mean, you were playing with about 24 men, really, last year, 24 and a half men. And what does that mean? Like, is it one run over a season? Is it two? Sorry, is it one game that cost you over a season? Is it two games? But if it costs you anything, then you really have to examine
You're not going to deal R.A. Dickey for the sake of dealing R.A. Dickey, in my opinion.
No.
You're going to deal him because there's somebody else out there that you'd rather have.
An upgrade.
Well, at least a theoretical upgrade.
If it's interesting what you say. I hadn't thought of it that way. That you deal Dickey for a young, controllable player and then use your savings on an ace. I hadn't thought of that. Because another ace that's going to be available is Jeff Samardzija, right? Like, I mean, he's going to be...
You're probably talking $25 million. Let's bring Bob Ryan in on the conversation from the Boston Globe. Mr. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing very well, gentlemen.
Quite an interesting Friday was the Blue Jays acquired Josh Donaldson. You put him with Russell Martin. And I'll pose the same question to you that I posed to Michael Grange 12 minutes ago. The Boston Red Sox or the Toronto Blue Jays? Who have upgraded better?
Mm.
With the two acquisitions in Boston or the two in Toronto?
Well, number one, okay, we know that both aren't done. The Red Sox,
correct,
of course, can't get done because they need at least two starting pitchers. I think that, let's put it this way. I mean, Martin's a very important acquisition, and he still can perform. Martin is past his peak, but he's still very useful, and he's something that the team needed. Donaldson is 1 year removed from his career year. I don't know what last year meant. He was not as good in 2014 as he was in 2013. If he was, maybe he wouldn't have been available. I don't know. Sandoval and on paper, I got to say Sandoval and Ramirez do trump on paper Martin and Donaldson. I don't see how a reasonable person would argue otherwise.
I just did. I think
the question is whether you're reasonable now.
Wow.
I mean,
that's why God invented the sports bar and the sports talk show.
Yeah, well,
so that's the reason.
Here we are.
Yeah. I would love to hear your reason.
Well, my thinking was, I think Donaldson's a better all around third baseman. And Martin, I thought his contributions as a catcher, his role, his impact, you know, all those things, his impact on a pitching staff. In addition to what he can provide offensively, I think he means more to this lineup than Ramirez would to most lineups. I think I
will argue this. I don't know. Okay, fine. The Red Sox, in terms of Sandoval as a third baseman, their production in three positions last year, actually four, was woeful, among the worst in all of baseball. Their offensive production at first base, third base, left field, and right field. Their whole outfield production was pathetic. And their corner infield is the source of power in theory for many teams, including the Red Sox in the past, was horrible. They have upgraded themselves, clearly. I mean, we can argue Sandoval versus Donaldson. Sandoval, we have to remember, though he looks funny, he can play third base. At this weight, I underline. At this weight, if he gains, 10 pounds more, no. But he is a dancing bear over there. He really is. He's a remarkably strange athlete.
He's
nimble, and he can play that damn position. You don't think he can, but he can.
Bob, I nobody loves a funny-looking athlete more than I do, right? Like, everybody loves those guys. That's why he's the Kung Fu Panda and everything. I think, you know, just the last few days here, we've been awash in WAR. I know, Bob, that's not your favorite either, Bob. Those aren't your favorite terms, right? But it's kind of that catch that I know.
Not
ask that.
It is an opinion based on variety of right. numbers, and it isn't even calculated the same by all people who love the
right. war. Well, I know, and that's why I preambled. But
all right.
I respectfully preambled because we have had this discussion on the show before. But I think what we're in agreement on is third base, because Brett Lowry was always hurt, was a sinkhole for the Blue Jays, and they've made a huge upgrade. And similarly, third base for Boston was non-existent. So Boston's made a huge upgrade. But I think if you could ask me who I would have as a third baseman, I would pick Josh Donaldson. And, you know, there is a fair, you know, the stats based. I mean, he's hits for better power. He's considered a better defender. So I think the Blue Jays did really well on that deal.
And well, he's been playing in a big ballpark. Not easy to hit home runs. He projects to a 30 plus home run hitter at the Sky Dome in Toronto.
Well, that's pretty ambitious. I'd say 25. If you say 30, I won't argue. You know the ballpark better than I. I do know it, but I don't. You know, I'll take your word for that. The issue is that both teams are significantly improved at that position than they were a week ago, or whenever we can backdate the Red Sox. So 2 weeks ago, they'd say they're much better off and at that position than they were. There's no question about that in either case. Then if you're going to go Ramirez versus Martin, well, obviously now we have an apple orange because we have a catcher and all the catchers.
Right. That's right.
Contributions as a versatile guy who not only is a subpar defender at his supposed position, is now going to be asked to mess up a third position, at left field. And we'll see if he applies himself to learning the wall, something Mr. Cespedes did not deign to do last year.
Nelson Cruz gets a 4-year deal, $57 million with the Seattle Mariners. Are you surprised at that number?
You know, a lot. I'm no longer surprised at the numbers. I am reading the people who follow these things for a living, and I, do not do it for a living. I'm an equal opportunity, observer here. But the numbers in baseball, the money is available. Seattle is interesting. They are spending money. They have been spending money, and they spent money on Seager. They locked him up. This is a big acquisition. But, four, and I can do the math on this one. It's not even $14 million a year. I'd say they're doing pretty well. Although, how old is he going to be when it's over? 39? Is he 35?
Yeah, I think so.
He's 34 years old, yeah.
Unfortunately, it's a bad lesson for us as we teach our youngins. Crime does pay, doesn't it?
Well, you now wonder, too. That's out of the Baltimore lineup with Toronto and Boston both making moves. How much of an impact does that have in the American League East?
Significant. I think Baltimore has really suffered a very grievous wound, and I don't know where they're going to how they're going to make up for it. I really don't. There was a question about how sustainable their success was anyway. Was there not?
Oh, I think so.
Many people projected them to be a team that was going to be a lasting threat in the league and the division. I think the people thought that they put it together at the right time, and they sort of circumvented mediocre starting pitching and managed to get as far as they did. With certain people, but taking Cruz out of the mix, I think hurts them a lot. It's interesting now. I mean, it really is this division. We have to say we're X-ing out Tampa Bay for the foreseeable future. They're no longer a factor. The Yankees have so many issues left. It's an attainable division for both for Toronto. It really is. I mean, quite frankly, right now, we don't know how to until you see what the Red Sox finally do, what they finally accomplish in getting pitchers. There's no way to fairly evaluate them. We're operating on the assumption here they will produce a couple of quality pitchers, but if they do not, then they're going to be asking themselves to win games, too many 9-7 games. So Blue Jays starting to look better, and it's all relative, right? All that matters is how good you are in relation to your competition. And right now, they're a lot better off than they were at the end of the season.
If the Lester offer from the Cubs is accurate, and that offer is said to be 6 years, $135 million+, does that take Boston out of that picture?
I think so. I think so. I mean, remember now where they started with this thing. I mean, it's just interesting how their thought process is evolving as last year's I won't say horror, but huge disappointment and crash sets in. They allegedly offered him 4 years and $70 million at the start of the, as all they offered him at the sometime in the between seasons of 2013 and 2014, and now they're up to apparently six for 120, and now the Cubs are going 135. The one thing Lester has to remember for that $15 million, and after you get done with the agents, you know, and then Uncle Sam, is he's going to. An easier league, you know, the National League, because of the no DH and is easier to pitch in, and that may be a deciding factor too. So I felt from the very beginning that the Cubs were in the driver's seat to get Lester, and that's I don't see any reason to change my mind.
Let's go to the Hall of Fame a little bit here, because the. There's always a debate, and there will be another one this year. Is there any reason for you to can you justify somebody not putting either Randy Johnson or Pedro Martinez on their ballot, checking them off?
I opined on this subject in the pages of the Boston Globe yesterday. This very topic, I led off by saying that though we are champions of free speech and we have a First Amendment and people are allowed to have unpopular opinions and they shouldn't be forced to, I think that we make exceptions for people who are unreasonably so out of the mainstream that they must be punished. I suggest that anyone who votes and does not vote for Randy or Pedro should have, among other things, his driver's license revoked and his passport confiscated.
And
sentenced to 100 hours of community service, and of course be thrown out of the Baseball Writers Association of America. To think that Randy, I can see someone doing some mental gymnastics and on career longevity and saying I'm not voting for Pedro this year. I don't want to give him first ballot. I think it's ridiculous. And Pedro will get 85% to 90%, probably 90%. Randy will be one of the highest vote getters of all time. Even there'll be a couple of lunkheads that won't vote. That's what drives me crazy. Some people will not vote for anybody in the first. That's why we've never had among the 50 or 75 people who should have been unanimous, we have none. Randy will get about 94.5. He'll threaten Seaver, maybe even up to 98, number one. Those they will get in. But anybody who doesn't vote for them, I mean, they really are seriously questioning. What Pedro Martinez did in an offensive era, the dominance he displayed, the Cy Youngs that he won, the ERA below two runs below the league average in a couple of years, the dominance that we saw is a first ballot Hall of Famer. And of course, Randy, we don't have to even begin to make a case for Randy.
Have you ever met anyone in your travels, Bob, who was in this tribe where on principle they would not vote? I read your article. It was very good. And just for our readers or listeners who maybe hadn't had a chance to read it, there is this tradition. No one's ever been a unanimous inductee to the Hall of Fame. And it goes right back. Like Babe Ruth wasn't unanimous. Bob Feller wasn't unanimous. And when I think the very first vote for Cooperstown, I'm trying to remember who you mentioned in your article, but who wasn't made unanimous.
Cobb, the first year, five people who voted in.
Well, he was
Ty
a jerk, so.
He got 200. He was a jerk, and he got 222 out of 226 votes. And I'd love to think that the fewer people didn't vote for him because they thought he was they were a horrible person.
Well, it's quite conceivable that's why, right? Is he was a well-known one of the bad people in baseball.
He was a very complicated man. But yes, by and large, I'd have to say he's more negative than positive. He did the one thing to say in his behalf that he was known to support. He actually underwrote the supported a lot of people. Fallen baseball. He became a multimillionaire because he invested in Coca-Cola.
Right.
And he was a rich man. But he was a bigot, and he was a bad, he was a very nasty man. But he did have a soft spot in his heart for other ballplayers, and in fact, spend a lot of money supporting other ballplayers in their lives. Other than that, there's not much good to be said about
Ty Cobb. He was not
unanimous.
Ruth
missed by 11 votes. And on it goes right through the likes of Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Stan Musial, Ted Williams, Bob Feller, as you mentioned,
everybody,
Hank Aaron, and recent guys such as Cal Ripken and I think the greatest catcher that we've ever known, Johnny Bench, and so on and on it goes.
So the question is your travels? Question. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Bob's giving me a bad
the
look.
Answer to the question I was asked is no, I haven't. Okay. I haven't gotten anyone to fess up yet. But somebody, they're still out there. Now, we know that the actuarial tables are in favor of, you know, us getting rid of them sooner rather than later. But we don't have rid of all those people yet.
And there is more transparency to the voting process. Like, people post their ballots. So maybe this time, whoever doesn't vote for Pedro, doesn't vote for Randy Johnson.
I don't think they care.
You know
what's interesting? The fact that we're having this conversation at all, because it's the time of the year, but my supposition is that there is no topic, at least in America, and maybe a little bit different because of the, you know, hockey being such an important part of Canadian life, but in America, there is no other sports topic that it's number one sports topic. It's the number one 24/7, 365. We are a football country now, but Baseball Hall of Fame is the greatest hot button topic there is. More people have opinions. More people care. More people get their dukes up on it. I think you could talk it 365 days a year down here. And now it's going to be a big, big deal for the next month because the ballots are out.
What do you think of Tim Raines? I'm just looking at refreshing myself on his numbers. Yeah, you do vote for him.
I do vote for him. I didn't always because for a couple of reasons. I needed to be shown. See, I've come around on several people. I mean, I'm one of these voters that people say, well, how can somebody get more votes one year than the next? Well, one reason a guy can get more votes one year than the next is that certain voters, myself included, listen to arguments and reason and change their minds and say, you know what? I was wrong. I think this guy deserves it. And so that's one reason. I'm now on board with Raines. And so he will get one of my 10 ballot checks.
That's the one that gets people going up here. I mean, I don't think there's a Canadian who doesn't think Tim Raines shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, it's a great, great topic. And, of course, the arguments, there's so much. I always recommend to people, they really want to get a feel for how we got where we are. You know, how do we get here? How did some of these people get in that we don't understand how they got in? Of course, the answer is Veterans Committee. And then it comes back to, well, why and how and who are they and when it all happened. The great tome on it was Bill James. Bill James wrote a book. The original name of the book was A What Price Glory or something like that. And then something with glory. And then he changed it to whatever happened to the Hall of Fame when he wrote a revised edition. But I would urge people who care at all, if you care about this topic and you really want to know how we got where we are and in the Hall of Fame, read this book. And I'm sure you can get it on Amazon or whatever. It really will answer a lot of questions for you. It really is a fascinating topic. Remember, the Hall of Fame is a private institution owned by the Clark family, the Singer Sewing Machine people. And they're their trustees, and they own the Hall of Fame. And there's a lot of things that people don't understand about the Hall of Fame.
Am I correct in assuming that you have never voted for Bonds, Clemens, McGuire, Sosa, or Palmeiro?
Yes, every year I explain that I haven't, and yet I always I end by saying, but I'm not saying I won't. I may wake up one day and say, you know what, the juice pitchers who pitched to the juice batters, I don't know who pitched to who, when, how many home runs wouldn't have been hit, how many strikeouts wouldn't have been accomplished. The hell with it. My purpose, what I wrote yesterday, and I've done this before, but I tried to spell out the wording. I think the Hall of Fame has to take control of the entire process. Now, they are controlling the balloting now. The Baseball Writers Association no longer issues the ballots. The Hall of Fame does. They will count the ballots, but they don't issue them. I think they should have a disclaimer and say, basically get a committee together to frame a disclaimer that goes in the Hall of Fame that basically says that there was a period of time when the performance-enhancing drugs were rife in baseball. It was a very controversial time. Many people put up significant numbers during this time. The writers have voted. Voters are mandated. Vote strictly on the basis of the numbers. Let people feel how they feel about these people. In other words, you know, take the all this confusion away. Stop having me agonize over this. Stop having me decide, do I vote for Piazza because someone told me he had acne on his back, or don't I? All this stuff, plus Bonds and all the rest of them. So I think the Hall of Fame should have a statement that we understand that drugs were in baseball, but we don't know that anybody can properly judge who did what to whom. So we're going to there will be people in here about whom there'll be suspicion. I mean, I'm just throwing out possible ways of phrasing it. We can have somebody phrase it. And I suggested yesterday, if you don't like it, and you go to Cooperstown, you can silently swear, you can vent, you can silently give a finger, you can silently, use a multifaceted curse word. You can do whatever you want and then go have a beer.
Very quickly, before we let you go, Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, the coach and owner of the New England Patriots, both named on a list of 305 people. Prosecutors have named as potential witnesses in the upcoming murder trial of Aaron Hernandez. What's the implication, in your opinion, of those two being named? What do you think they're trying to get from those two?
This is a prosecution witness or
prosecution witness. Yeah.
Prosecution witnesses.
Because I could see character, I guess. I mean, what did you know when you know it, I guess, or kind of thing, too. What did you know when you know it? I mean, did you follow up on any implications that you ever heard, any inferences you ever heard? We know that they're supposed to have an employee of every team, these former cops and FBI guys and all these people that are their security people. They hear things, their ears to the ground. This guy was obviously hanging out in certain circles that no one else in the team was. What did they know? Did they bother to investigate the charge in Florida? You know, the Tallahassee thing that's hanging out there about his involvement. You know, they drafted him. The only reason it was available to them in the fourth round was he was tainted. He was damaged goods. Obviously, he was a first-round talent. I suppose stuff like that. What did you know and when did you know it? And perhaps some relevance to what? I don't know. I mean, it's an amazing story. Really, the fact that there are two different trials at stake here, the issue here, is the really fascinating thing. You know, there's a double murder in Boston, and there's the murder of Odin Lloyd.
Yeah.
Two different things we're talking about here. Incredible. It's absolutely. I keep coming back to this, guys, that for the full year after he allegedly murdered two people, or was involved in the murder of two people, allegedly, that I'm a player on that team, and I dressed next to him, and I showered with him, and I cheered for him when he got us a touchdown or a first down. Doesn't it creep you out? I would love that answered by these guys. I mean, the closest anyone has come saying anything publicly was Matt Light, the offensive tackle since retired, who was quoted as saying, "I didn't like what he stood for." Well, what do you mean by that specific phraseology, or did he mean anything by that specific phraseology? I'd love someone to ask Matt Light that. And who else has any more opinions about what they thought he was doing in his off hours?
What a story. We'll watch with great interest. Mr. Ryan, thank you for your time as always.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Talk to you next week. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. When we come back, the owner of the Ottawa Senators, Eugene Melnyk. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Now 19 minutes before the hour. Bob McCown, Michael Grange in our Toronto studios. Next hour, Alex Anthopoulos, general manager of the Blue Jays, Jim Houston of the NHL and Sportsnet will join us. But first, here's the owner of the Ottawa Senators. Here is Eugene Melnyk. Mr. Melnyk, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing, Bob?
Good. How do you feel about your hockey club?
What's that?
How do you feel about your hockey club?
Okay, you got to just speak up. I'm sorry. I got a bad line.
Okay, we'll talk louder.
All right. How do I like my hockey club? I think, listen, we've got, we're just going through a funky period, I think, that it happens to any team that, is just, we're trying and we're almost over trying, but the talent is there. And I said that at the beginning of the season. I say it again. I think we've got a talented team. I think if everyone plays up to their potential, we are a good playoff contender. We just need to get everybody on the same page at the same time. And I think we'll do well.
There have been a few, that there are boatloads of commentators around this place who need things to talk about. Among the things that have been mentioned over the last 10 days or so is the future of your head coach. Do you want to comment on it?
There's nothing really to comment on the future of the head coach. you know, first of all, that's a hockey decision that I stay away from. And that's a Brian Murray's paid, you know, the big bucks to make those decisions and make the recommendations. And, you know, I've always relied on him to, you know, put forth those recommendations. And you know, as of right now, you know, we have not specifically talked about anything to do with the head coach. And, you know, I'll wait. You know, it's almost a wait-and-see attitude, and we're hoping to see an improvement in the team. And that's really all there is to it.
Eugene, Mike Grange here. I guess there's a couple of topics around the Senators, and we'll touch on both, but obviously the Alfredson retirement coming up next week. But you mentioned Brian Murray, and some really beautiful stories came out in the past couple of weeks about his battle with cancer and performing as a general manager while undergoing chemotherapy for you know, cancer. He's quite frankly will eventually kill him. That it's not curable at the stage it's at. What's it like when such a valuable employee goes through that and you know, balancing, you know, as a friend, I'm sure you guys are very close. But also, you know, this guy is the linchpin of your hockey operation. So how do you manage that as an owner?
Well, I think you said a lot of things right in there. You know, Brian and I have, you know, I think great respect for each other. And, you know, I was really touched that I was the second call after his wife when he found out that he had cancer. And, you know, what you do is... And that's the way he wants to do it, and that's the way we do it, is we talk virtually daily, especially during game time. You know, during the game, I'm on the phone with him. You know, we scream at each other, but we're not screaming at each other. We're screaming at referees and stuff and screaming at players. And you have to continue as business as usual. Otherwise, you know, what's the point? And that's the way he wants it, and that's the way we're going to do it, and that's the way I'm going to live with it, and the way he wants to live with it. And the one thing that I can tell you is that I've never seen a braver guy that stands up and says, look, if I can help one person, not make the same mistake I did, and that's not to get a colonoscopy at the age of 49 or 50, then and save a life, then it was all worth living for. And that's his mantra right now, and he's been very vocal in that area. And I know for a fact that literally dozens and dozens of people that around us have gone into hospitals and have set up appointments. So, you know, I can't say enough about it, and we just tried to ignore the reality. And it could be, you know, you could call it denial if you want, but we're not. We understand, you know, we're succession planning, and it's tough, but it's the way he wants it, and that's the way we have to deal with it.
With Eugene Melnyk, the owner of the Ottawa Senators. Talk to me a little bit about the Alfie retirement thing. Is this obvious to you? Was this a clear choice? You know, let's have him back, let's let him retire as an Ottawa Senator, or was there an issue with regard to this?
There was never an issue. There was, you know, we talked to, or I, and I specifically, as did Brian, but I've talked one-on-one with Alfie through the summer, and at least two, three times, and, you know, we talked about how he's going to look at this coming year and what it's going to take for him to continue on. And, you know, he made his final decision of whether he's going to be able to play or not. He's a very competitive guy. You see very few guys over 40 playing the game, and, you know, it's almost superhuman to see a guy like him, you know, anybody playing hockey over the age of 40 and being productive and contributing. So, no, we've been talking about this for... not about the retirement. We've been retired, you know, talking about hopefully playing for us after he became a UFA. And it wasn't a question of who he was going to play with. It was more, can he play and does he want to play? And I think from his perspective, you know, he's made a life decision. And, you know, it's, you know, frankly, he's doing it a smart way. He's, you know, he's at the peak. He peaked, and he's not going to wait to go down and keep trying for another few years and then, you know, kind of peter out. He's leaving pretty much at the top. So it's I'm happy for him and his family and his wife Bibi and the four kids and the fact that you know, it's a whole new life out there, and he's looking forward to it.
Do you think the fans in any way, Gino, will there be any resentment that he left the organization?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely, irrevocably not. You're going to see mayhem on next Thursday. Absolute mayhem, and it's in support of Alfie coming back and doing what he's doing. It's the right thing to do. It's a special night for everyone. You know, we are just being inundated with requests for tickets, and we just can't accommodate everyone. And I know that it's not nationally televised. It's regionally televised, but I'm sure it'll end up on YouTube and everywhere else and replays and stuff. But we're making it a very special night for him, and it's something that he will remember, and he deservedly does, have to have a night like this along with his family.
Eugene, when he did leave, there were some hard feelings, I think, on each side, whether it's miscommunication or whatever it might be. What was the first step in kind of reaching out and creating this bridge so that the retirement of, you know, really the Senator's first legacy player can go off as you expect it will go off? How did that first reconnection happen?
You know, it's tough to say because, you know, we never, you know, I was actually completely out of it, meaning I wasn't even involved in the whole thing. I didn't mind taking the bullet for it, but at the end of the day, I was actually in Toronto at Rodney's Oyster House getting my bill when I got the call from Brian that he said he's not coming back. And I said, what are you talking about? It can't be money. And he goes, I said, because pay him whatever he wants. And he said, no, he's not coming back. And I said, I couldn't believe it. So anyway, and then it just took time, and he did his thing. And, you know, over time, we start talking and continue talking. And, you know, you got to be careful, you know, when somebody's part of another team, you can't, get involved. But there was never a question, I think, in my mind that he would at one point, he loves Ottawa. And I think that ultimately he will come back and live in Ottawa. He's adored in Ottawa, and he can do anything. He can do anything he wants.
Right.
And as you know, and his family is very comfortable there. You know, they've spent 17 years there, so it's for him, it's home. And you know, it's only a question of time before you see him. Him there.
Eugene, we got to go. We're out of time. Thank you, as always, for your time. We didn't get you any trouble today. That's good. Alex Anthopoulos, Jim Houston in the next hour. Primetime Sports continues in a moment.